This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
This is AmTower Off-Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. Every week, author, speaker, consultant Mark AmTower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. AmTower Off-Center with your host, Mark AmTower.
Welcome to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. I'm Mark AmTower. My guest today is a return guest, Joanne Wojtek, the program manager for the NASA SEWP contract. Joanne, welcome back.
Thank you for having me.
It's always a pleasure to have you here, and this is kind of a special one because just about 10 days ago, SEWP 5 literally opened the doors finally.
Yes, finally. a year late, but a year better.
Hey, you know, issues beyond our control.
Yes.
You know, I didn't get a vote, and you had to respond to all of those negative votes. Won't go there. Let's do a little history of the SEWP program going back to one, if you would be so kind.
Sure. So SEWP, originally known as the Scientific and Engineering Workstation Procurement, was begun in the 1990s, around 1992, by some folks at NASA who wanted to help a scientist buy a computer in less than 6 months, and came up with this concept of an IDIQ contract that was seen as such a good idea that first NASA headquarters asked us to make it NASA-wide, and then GSA at the time said, if you want a DPA for this, a Delegation Procurement Authority, make it the first pilot government-wide acquisition contract. So we were the pilot for this GWAC phenomena that now exists. We didn't really want to do it that way, but that we kind of forced into it by the politics of the time. We said, well, if we're going to do it, we're going to do it right and do it well. So the three folks who started the program set up a really good tradition that I try to carry on. At the beginning, we were a single award, eight companies, just trying to get, again, really quick access to computers. As the popularity of the idea and the concepts grew, each time we pretty much doubled the number of companies on the contract. We got to SEWP 3, we switched from single award to multi-award. Clearly with SEWP 4 and 5, that became even more the concept for continuing competition. And we switched from just workstations to being whole solutions, which is why we're now the solutions for enterprise-wide procurement.
Okay. Now, lifespan from 1 through 4, we're talking roughly about $70 billion in sales at this point. Do we know?
Not $70 billion. It'd probably be around $20, $25 billion. In SEWP 4, we did $17 billion, $17.5 billion.
So before that, it was...
So before that, it was much smaller.
Radically
smaller.
Okay.
We doubled in size annually, more than doubled in size annually during SEWP 4. As more agencies came to use us at a higher level. So there was a time when we actually broke out the champagne. I think it was during SEWP 3 when we hit $1 billion in sales for the entire contract. We now have in SEWP 4, we had three companies go over $1 billion in sales.
Three companies?
Yes.
Okay. We won't speculate as to who, but I have some suspicions. So SEWP 5 obviously hit a few bumps in the road, but what's different about this vehicle?
So every time we do a new SEWP iteration, we look back at what happened and what lessons learned and try to anticipate what's going on in the future. And we certainly did so with SEWP 5. Of course, the first biggest difference anybody will see is there's a lot more companies. And that might be concerning at times if somebody's saying, well, you used to only have eight, now you have 150. But I think it really speaks to where the government is now in terms of wanting competition, continued competition, providing more access to companies to be able to participate in a vehicle such as this. We had planned on certainly a larger number, maybe not as many as we ended up with, but it was our plan to our anticipation that we would have much more than in Soup 4. We had a problem in Soup 4, quite honestly. We grew so large that the number of companies was not able to keep up with the demand by our customers. And we saw a strain there with not enough RFQs getting responded to by not enough companies. And also just a strain of getting products to them. It was, you know, we doubled, more than doubled in size. And so we needed to really more than double in size with the companies that could then assist our
Okay, I'm assuming that the RFQ issue with you have three times the vendors this time out,
right?
Yeah.
So we hope that we will see, and we actually had at least one of the companies tell me that they plan on responding to every RFQ, and I said thank you because that's what our company, you know, whether they do it or not, just to have that as a goal versus we're only going to respond to some.
Do they have any idea how many RFQs come through this bad boy?
Yes, this company actually does because they were smart and hired a former program manager of one of the other of the incumbents, so they knew what they were getting themselves into. And you know, I don't expect them to necessarily respond to all, but just to have the goal of that is a good sign.
Yeah, every now and again I'll run across somebody who has played a role on each of the contracts from the vendor side.
Yes.
And they have really neat stories to tell.
Some of them good, some of them bad.
Well, you know, overall, and this is important to point out, Soup has evolved into a favorite contract, probably the favorite contract for IT products. For a variety of reasons. So before we go any further, let's talk about those reasons. First and foremost, mods on your contract take an average of what?
So everything we do takes not an average, but everything we do, we have a stated one-day turnaround. So when a request comes in, we respond within a day. Now, we are a little strained this past 10 days as we try to bring up 150 companies. We've kept up with the mod requests. Bearing in mind, and this is one of the lessons learned for the new companies as they get involved with us, that does not mean that every item requested gets on contract in a day. It means that we will look at every item and some of them may not get on because they still have a control system. It's not just, oh, I want this, put it on at any price. It has to be priced correctly. It has to be competitive with the other contracts. It has to be in scope. It has to have good descriptions. We actually have an interesting balance of lots of flexibility, but you have to do it in a very controlled environment.
Okay. Yeah. And then we can get into supply chain, but we'll do that a little later on. Then, you know, the other aspect of this, and again, this works both sides of the street, the customer service on Soup beyond simply the mods has been exemplary.
Yes, we really think that even more so than the speed is one of the drivers. We get so many customers who are just amazed, A, that we answer the phone, and or if we don't, we respond within minutes of them sending a ticket. There'll be a response, especially if it's a high level issue. We have very quick response time, and we try to support them, and it's our job, and that's how we look at it.
And you take your job obviously very seriously. One of the other factors, obviously, is the cost of doing business through Soup. And if I remember correctly, you are the lowest price vehicle for acquiring technology in the market right now.
Right. One of the nice things about how we set up Soup from the beginning is it's always been a self-contained entity, and more so than anybody else, based on GAO, we actually do not allow any of our money to trickle into anything other than support of the program, which allows me to balance the budget, getting as much money as we need to run the program, and that's all. It cuts out any need to keep it higher. So we're down to 0.39%. We actually dropped the fee to a flat 0.39, and that's 0.39% of the cost, and we added the cost and the price of the products. Because it really becomes easier for us to manage and the customers to manage if we just had the vendors provide us with the fee out of their product price.
Okay, so in effect, it's free for feds.
It's somewhat. I'm not going to say it's free because
there's a cost avoidance issue.
Right. Well, the vendor was still. I like to be honest. And in fact, when the customer gets our email that we've processed the order, we do tell them what the fee is. We want to make sure the customer knows that there is a cost to using us. Mm. It does raise a slight amount the cost of products, but in return, they get the customer service, they get the turnaround, they get the tool sets. They get a lot of, and with Soup 5, they're going to start getting more reports and more tracking, more capabilities than they've ever had before, and much more than they could ever do on their own. So it's a very small price to pay, but we do want to make sure they know that there is a price, and that's and it's hopefully to seem to them to be reasonable.
Cool. My guest today is Joanne Wojtek of NASA Soup. You can find, what is the web address for the Soup contract?
So the web address is www.sewp.nasa.gov, and okay. SEWP, not SOUP.
There you go. Yes, SEWP. That's the important part. I'm Mark Amtower. You're listening to Amtower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Back after this. Welcome back to Amtower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Mark Amtower. My guest today is Joanne Wojtek, the program manager of my favorite contract in the government market, Soup. Four categories, again. So briefly explain them and what they're basically for.
So there's four categories and actually five groups of contracts that we awarded. Soup does its RFP process and its awards through a competition broken up into various areas, primarily the differentiation being the type of business and essentially the NAICS code, which kind of defines that type of business, both in terms of what the business is aimed for and what size of business it is. So our Group A, for example, our key goal there is to have manufacturers available in Group A, so folks like Dell, HP, and IBM, and it's therefore it's a full and open competition group. Similarly, at Group D, on the other end, is a full and open competition geared towards value-added resellers. In between those two are our set-asides that were meant to ensure that we had certain types of size businesses on board. Group B, HubZone, surprisingly enough, it's for HubZone set-aside. Mm-hmm. Group B, SDVOSB, was an SDVOSB set-aside. And then Group C was small business set-aside. The scope of Soup is the same for all the groups. It's really up to the customer and the contracting officer doing the order to look at the groups, decide which type of company or companies and which sizes they want to go to, and then select based on that criteria. It's not a scope issue or what's available. Every item that's available in one group is available in every group.
Okay. So and we're talking just a few items here.
Just a few. We're already close to, I think, 3 million products on the catalog after 10 days of loading them, and many more to go.
If it's related to IT, the likelihood is it's there.
It's either there or it will be there within days of being requested.
Real soon. Now, I've dealt with a lot of these small businesses that have had a lot of different contracts. This seems to be their favorite as well. Let me preface this. When Max Peterson was at CDW, we did an interview once, and he said for CDWG, the trifecta for them was GSA Schedule, the ECS3, and NASA Soup, because he said if his salespeople had those three contracts, there wasn't anybody in government that didn't have a favorite among those three. So, and I know even back then they were leveraging Soup a lot.
Yeah, CDW is one of our top companies. Yes.
Not a surprise. But why is Soup good for small business?
Well, for one thing, because of the set asides that we do and how we operate, we end up with a large number of small businesses. So almost, and I don't have the number yet, we're still trying to get through SAM, the infamous SAM system, to try to make sure we have the right number as to who's small and what their sizes are. But when I, out of 150, I think only 25 to 30 of those companies are other than small. So we have close to 100, over 100, I can say that, over 100 small businesses on Soup. If a business is willing, as a small business to learn and to grow. There are so many opportunities in soup. We do 30,000 orders a year that they can find a place. They don't have to go after every big order. In fact, we just had a small company come to us on Soup 5, and they said, well, I don't really want to bid on some of these full and open requirements because the big businesses are going to get them. And my reply back is, no, go after them, because the big business is only going to go after the really big ones. Start getting yourself known by going after some of the smaller ones, even if they're full and open, even if they're not set aside to small businesses. Let yourself be known and you'll grow. And we saw that in Soup 4, where some of these businesses came in, had very little federal experience. In the first year or two, did $100,000, a few $100,000, and by the end, we're doing tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars a year in business because they learned to leverage the vast number of customers that we have out there.
Yeah, I'm doing a webinar for one of the publications on selling from a GWAC, and my first piece of advice is understand that this is a long-term vehicle. Don't try to do everything at once, but becoming known is the number one thing you should be doing.
Exactly. That's great advice, because that is one of the concerns we had, is companies coming in and thinking, oh, today I'm going to get, you know, $20 million. No, it might be a year or two before you start getting to those types of numbers. But if you do your homework early on, the opportunities are there. I would say, and the other piece for Soup 5 in particular is we actually have it set up so the customer is able to do set-asides across the board and do set-asides, not just in the SDVOSB and hub zone and small business, but also women-owned small businesses and so on. So they have the opportunity, if there are two or more companies that have that can sell it, that they can be set aside for. So we've increased the capabilities and the functionalities of the set-asides in Soup 5.
With the 100-plus companies, do you think you've covered all the set-aside categories? Was that a goal?
It was certainly, I can't say a goal. It was a hope, certainly. Mm-hmm. A goal sounds too strong.
Right.
But you know, not knowing how it would work out. But yes, it did work out that way. And we do it by the true set-asides, based on what the FAR says is a set-aside.
Right.
Some people are confused by certain things being set-asides that are not. But everything that can be a set-aside is, every category is represented in Soup 5.
Very cool. So I know you do a fair amount of education. You used to do the conference. Hope the conference comes back, because when I attended, I think the Soup 10, I keynoted your suit in 2010. It was the most, it was like a family reunion. It was the warmest event I've ever been at. Everybody knew each other. The vendors were like old buddies, not competitors. The customers were happy to meet everybody, and your staff was just, you know, great as well. But it was an educational event.
We are looking to ways within the current climate of government. I'm not doing a government sponsored event, but with where we are now with our industry partners and where the conference industry is to seeing if we can leverage other ways of doing it that not utilizing government funds, so that we don't run into the issues that have caused problems in the past for other agencies and other events.
And we're not going to do it in Vegas with video.
Not in Vegas.
correct me if I'm wrong. I've heard from a couple of vendors that you're doing like online briefings as well now to get people up to speed.
Yeah. So between having 150 vendors and we now have well over probably close to 400 customers wanting trainings. We used to go out and train one-on-one as often as we could, and trying to get people to pay attention to us.
I remember.
We no longer have the problem of people paying attention to us. We had the problem of too many requests. So we're trying to leverage other ways of doing that. And webinars and WebExes are certainly becoming a key piece of that. We've already held several with our Soup 5 vendors. We'll be having another one next week. We've had a couple with our customers. We had over 400 customers on the last one. Our first WebEx with Soup 5 was 500. People online, which was kind of a shock, even though we knew that it would
was
be that
was that
many.
From the vendor side?
From the vendor side, yeah. Yes. So so it's definitely a good way for us to leverage information flow to our customers and our contract holders. And I see us expanding upon that usage down the road. We also are doing more videos. We have a video on Soup 5 out already. We're trying to keep up through other methodologies.
Gonna have a YouTube page?
Well, actually, I am on YouTube due to so
I know you're on YouTube, but I haven't seen a NASA suit page there yet.
No, we are on LinkedIn, we are on Facebook, we encourage anybody to hook into that. That will at least keep you up to date on any activities that are occurring with SOUP.
And there is an official SOUP group on LinkedIn, correct?
Yes.
So
yes.
Just type in NASA SOUP in the search bar on LinkedIn, and it's not the biggest group out there, but for this contract, it doesn't have to be. All right, we're going to take a break. You're listening to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We will be back after these messages. Welcome back to AmTower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. My guest is Joanne Wojtek of NASA SOUP. So we went through this long, extended SOUP 4 period, let's call it. How many companies from 4 made the quantum leap to 5?
So, and not too surprising a situation, we have a multi-award contract that keeps growing, both in usage and number of companies. Generally, incumbents know what they're doing and know how to bid and have a good chance at a multi-award opportunity. And SOUP 5, that came out with all but two of the original SOUP 4 vendors are on SOUP 5. One of them dropped out because they were not getting any business. They did not understand the federal marketplace. And another one dropped out because they were more of a manufacturer. And their products are being sold through the resellers on SOUP 5, so it didn't make sense for them to hold their own contract.
They have a presence anyway, and we're
yes.
going to kind of get into that. So, it was how many companies on?
So we had 38 companies originally in SOUP 4.
36 yes. made the leap.
And 36 made the leap.
There you go. Very cool.
Which means that 110 new companies are there. 110 new companies. So yes, we got incumbents, but we also took in a lot of new folks.
Mm-hmm. Yes, lots of fresh blood, which I enjoy a lot because now I'm reaching out to all of those people to connect. So here's the biggie, and a lot of companies now are sitting on the sideline going, "Damn, I missed it." Did they?
So we especially as soon as you announced the award, we had all these. How do I get an award? And we will continue to get those for the next 10 years, Yes, you. It's not possible at this point to simply get a contract. You could do the old buy a company routine to get one, but
I'll wait a year and then I'll figure out which ones to go after. Yeah,
yeah, that, and there might be some companies that do that, but that's not the best way to be involved. Most of the companies that actually get in touch with us would never get a SOUP contract. It's a misunderstanding of how SOUP operates, comparing us to maybe a GSA scheduled type of situation where the goal is to have lots of companies. Who do very specific things. SOUP is the goal is to do solutions. So if all you do is make disk drives, no, you're not going to get a SOUP contract no matter what we do because we don't have a disk drive contract. We have a contracts that sell all types of equipment, including disk drives. So what you want to do is, if you make disk drives, is work with a company, get your disk drives on their contract. In fact, work with multiple companies, get those drives on multiple contracts so that you're visible as much as possible to the customers, because each company has their own pluses and minuses, and do a business to business relationship. So if you're a manufacturer, if you do services or products that fall within the IT, AV, communications world, work with those companies, get on our website. We have the list of points of contact and see how you can get your products and services on their contracts. If you're a reseller or some company of that ilk, team with those companies. I mentioned about 100 and over 100 companies and small businesses. Some of them are very small. They are now being hit with hundreds of RFQs daily. They need help. They may not have realized that when they started, but now they do. They're going to need other companies to work with them to help respond to these RFQs, going out and doing whatever businesses do to get business. Mm-hmm. So we would advise any company to work with them. You don't have to have a contract on SOUP to be a part of SOUP and to succeed with SOUP. You just will be a part of a business that has a contract.
Okay. So if you go to the SOUP website and you click on the contract holders, you can get contact information for virtually every company that has a SOUP vehicle.
Right. So on the SOUP website, www.sewp.nasa.gov, there's a link on the top that says contract holders, and I believe the second link under that is program managers. That gives you the list of all the program managers at each company. And then you can actually delve into further and click on a company name. You'll get all their information about them and links to their websites and even more contact points of contact.
Okay. You know, I made a list. I downloaded the list, and I immediately went through to see if I was connected with all companies on LinkedIn that are now part of Soup5. There's some voids. So if you're listening to this and you're not connected with me and you have a Soup5 contract, you best do so, because otherwise I'll be stalking you.
And just to go on with that, just a little note that surprised us and I think is a good sign for where people need help. I was expecting with 150 companies, I said 10% of them won't even show up for the first meeting. Well, only one did not show up. Only one actually disappeared from our radar.
Live meeting.
For the live meeting. Yeah, well, totally. Yeah. I mean, we actually ended up not getting a contract because they're gone. We don't know where they went to. But that means that there are, if you take that 10% of those companies who I really did not think were going to have the wherewithal, they're trying. They want to succeed. So there is an opportunity to work with these companies and help them succeed. And we want them to.
Well, there's a variety. You know, you mentioned the RFQ process. You know, I'll be speaking at APMP, not because I'm a proposal guy, because I'm a marketing guy. But if you need help on the proposal side, APMP has chapters all over the country. In D.C., it's focused on the federal market. NCMA has chapters all over the country. Obviously, in D.C., Mike Fischetti's core group here is focused on Fortune 1.
Yes.
But there's a lot of resources out there. Just vet your resource before you you sign up. Check them out, because there's some slime balls out there. I can say that. You can't.
No, I can't. No.
And I can name them, but we won't go there today because you're on the show. But you know, when I was doing my research, I mentioned this in between. I am going to bring them up. When I'm looking up companies there where I don't have a connection, it always on LinkedIn, it gives you, you know, who you share in first degrees. I kept seeing Dan Satinoff's name pop up. He's with FireEye, and I especially found them connected with, you know, either the integrators that are on the contract or the resellers that are on the contract. But he popped up everywhere. So I shot him a note saying, you know, how many points of entry do you think you have on Soup? And he just sent me back a little smiley face and said, yeah, a few. Mm-hmm. So, and do they have a contract? No.
No, but they're still, you can still be active, yes.
Right. So that's pretty damn cool. I like that. So what's your schedule for online events? Are you going to be doing things monthly? Have you leveled that out yet, or?
So I think we're right now trying to dig out of the typhoon that was Soup5 starting up, and recognizing what it means to have 150 companies now on board. But we are getting to a point of understanding what's going on. As I mentioned, we do hope to do some type of an event in possibly in the fall somewhere on the East Coast. That is not a Soup sponsored event, but an industry, hopefully industry sponsored event. So watch for that. But it will have elements of a training for both contract holders and our customer base. We are going out to our customers now, and again, WebEx is webinars. We will be having those. Right now, we're focusing on our contract holders, just trying to get them up and running. Our next goal will be to try to figure out how to train their sales force. We feel that that's very important. Sales folks are the first line of defense to the
best
customer.
Marketing tool is an educated salesperson,
and education is important. We are very very strict on adherence to the contract. Well, if we're going to be very strict about that, we have to make sure that we've told them what the rules are. So we're aware of our need to do that, and we'll be working on that over the next few months of getting that out.
Okay, we're going to take our last break. You're listening to AmTower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. We'll be back after this. Welcome back to AmTower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. This is our last segment for this show with Joanne Wojtek of Soup. And I've kind of saved I don't know if you call it the best for last, but it's certainly the most interesting in a variety of ways. supply chain risk management. We talked about this when you were on the show last time, and you said this was going to be a bigger component of Soup 5. So give us the whole ball of wax here, please.
The whole ball of wax. So several years ago, in recognizing that where the government was in concerns with supply chain risk management, we, the Soup Program Office, became involved with the Open Trust Technology Forum, which is an international standards committee working on supply chain risk management and how to accreditate companies. We actually now have a standard out there. It's going through the standardization process and an accreditation program that we hope to see being used. But what that means for Soup is I learned a lot about what supply chain meant to companies and how that might be leveraged and understanding where industry stood on it. And sometimes I find that governments and industries views are the same and sometimes different depending on how we look at it. When we got to Soup 5, I put into Soup 5 the main concern that a multi-award IDIQ contract vehicle used by the entire government can be concerned with. We can't be concerned with a particular product, but we can be concerned with how do we give information to our customers so they can make a risk-based decision. And the main concern is, how did this product get from the manufacturer to me, the customer? And that comes down to the term that is oft misused, authorized reseller. And I say misused because there is no definition for authorized reseller, but people seem to think there is. It's whatever a company decides it is. And for the most part, most companies, there's no such thing as authorized resellers. They just say anybody can sell it. One of the things I learned is that there's a lot of paper that people just rubber stamp names of companies on, and they don't really have any true authorization process. And then there are, where does distributors flow into this, and how does that work? How do small businesses who don't have the ability to pony up the money or the engineers or whatever it is that a huge business wants for an authorized reseller program, how do they fit in? So this all came into my thought process, and how do we, knowing that there are all these differentiations, what can we best provide our customers? So we came up with a level of risks, essentially notification, where we tell the customer for every item that they're purchasing, is this company an the manufacturer? So that's obviously the least risk in terms of provenance. Are they an authorized reseller? Then we go to slightly different variations. Are they a partial authorized reseller? Because an authorized reseller for Oracle might be authorized for servers, but not for software. So you need to differentiate between that. Are they a one-off? We found out that many times a company like a Cisco or a Juniper might say, for this one deal, I'll authorize you. Well, you know, so that's a different situation. Or do they use a distributor who's an authorized reseller? That leaves a break in the link, in the sense they're not a direct authorized reseller, but there is some continuity. And the new one that we actually are just adding, because we have found this to be important, is this company doesn't have an authorized reseller list. They just let anybody sell their product. And so, you know, we really can't say they're authorized or not authorized. It's neither a good nor bad. It's just reality. And then there is, this company has authorized resellers and this company is not an authorized reseller. So so those are our levels that we now will tell our customers that for every quote, which level each line item is at.
Okay. What is the benefit to being, quote, an authorized reseller? And what's the downfall of someone's not? What's your goal here? To ensure that the product comes from a legitimate source or what?
Well, very good question. And that comes down to what does an authorized reseller mean? And one of my concerns is, to sidetrack that for a second, is I hear from certain government folks and certain large businesses, well, why doesn't the government just require that everybody be an authorized reseller? That sounds real simple. It sounds like, oh, well, that just means that we'll be sure of the provenance and we know that these are the good companies. But there are lots of downfalls to that approach. For one thing, most companies don't have authorized reseller programs. For another thing, sometimes it means is it's going to cost the government more money. That's all. Quite honestly, an authorized reseller means I have access. I can control the money flow. Now, for the big companies, that's not true. What it usually means is that they have that they require the company reselling their product to have certain knowledge base. That's good. And if I'm buying a major networking equipment, I probably want that.
Right.
If I'm buying a cable for my power source, I may not care that they have intense engineering knowledge in how a cable is made. So the level of knowledge might depend on what you're buying it for, who you're buying it with. So it's not as simple as a case of saying everybody should be authorized. But there are times when it is important. Again, you're doing a major system, you have high security concerns, you want to ensure that. one of the other interesting things we found is that many contracts will say everybody's authorized, but I suspect there is not a lot of verification that goes on. I would like to note that we verify every single statement by sending an email to the company, the manufacturer, saying this company says they're authorized. Tell us if they're not. And this has worked tremendously already, where we've had a number of companies say, oh, yes, we think we are. And turns out they're not. So when you use Soup, we will have not just saying that they are, but they'll be verified, authorized when it's important to our customer. If it's not important, again, if you're buying something that doesn't really require it, then don't pay attention to that as much. But that's up to the customer to decide, not for us at a level that may not make sense.
Okay. Anything else we need to touch on the supply chain issue or?
No, I think it's very important for customers to be aware of what they're asking for and then be aware of whether or not when they use any contract, if it says it's authorized, how do you know for sure that's true? And again, with Soup, if we say they're authorized, it will be a verification process, not just a letter, but an actual verification from the manufacturer.
Okay. So we have 100 minimum small businesses on this vehicle. What do you want to tell them initially?
So initially, as some of them are already aware now, this is not just a few credit card orders here and there. This is a huge contract vehicle. There's a lot of opportunities. Take your time. Put some resources into place so that you can build up your expertise. Note that if you want to be known, you have to reply to RFQs. And find ways. We mentioned how companies can work with that don't have contracts. Well, on the flip side, those companies that do have contracts, look for companies that don't have contracts and find them and leverage them also. They're anxious to work with you. We're getting those emails. You know, how can we help? Well, it can work in the avenue can be both directions. And I think these smaller companies need to find ways to expand beyond, oh, I thought I just would sell a few products to, oh, wait, I can sell everything. Let me see what I can do to partner with folks who can help me do that.
You see, that's what was cool when I was competing with you back in the 90s on Super Mini. We appended everything. and it didn't matter if it was in scope or not.
Well, it does matter if it's in scope for us. I will say that. We do watch very carefully what's in scope. We've already said a few things that have been asked for or not and Soup 5. And again, also be aware, very important for contractors on Soup, that the balance of flexibility, if you play within the sandbox of what we give you, there's a lot of opportunity. But don't try to go outside the lines. We have a lot of control over what occurs, and we will stop things from happening. We don't let it flow. It might sound like, oh, things are done quickly. They're done quickly, but within a very confined space.
Okay, so if you play within rules, if you played within rules on Soup 4, and admittedly there were a lot fewer companies involved, and minus the two that didn't make the leap, all of those companies made money.
To a greater or lesser
degrees. Yeah.
Yes, and both the companies that did not make the leap were not really, I think, making money on their own. Again, they were mostly using others. I think, and the other thing to know, without spending a lot of time talking about it, because we're talking more about industry, but for the government folks, we're doing a lot more for them, and we have a lot of interest at the agency level. More agencies to use us at the agency level for more purchases. So it's strategic sourcing, whether it be at the federal level, agency level, or site level. That idea of finding ways to have more control and information and reporting, that's all available in Soup, and our agencies are looking to use us. So the opportunities are only going to grow. So don't think, oh, but you were limited. No, we're not limited. We're only limited by the success of the program. If this program is a success, both from a program point of view and industry responding and providing good products and good services, then the government will come and use the program more.
Okay. Now, I had one final question, and we didn't discuss this previously, but what is surprising about Soup for those new industry partners that maybe we haven't touched on?
Well, we sort of touched on it, but it was interesting to get that email that says, oh my gosh, how many RFQs are coming to us, basically, and not recognizing ahead of time just how huge Soup was. or possibly thinking, oh, now I have a NASA contract. Wow, this is great. No, you don't have a NASA contract. You have one of the top government-wide contracts used by every government agency. The opportunities,
including NASA.
Well, including NASA. NASA is always the key and the central piece of what SEWP is about from the program point of view. But in terms of usage, DOD is our biggest customer, VA. But again, you can go through the list of every agency, and they do. There is an opportunity there, but it does mean yes, there are a lot of requests. There's a lot of work. It's not just a simple case of I can get anything I want on this contract at any price. No, you have to give us good pricing. You have to give us good products. You have to give us good descriptions. You have to give good customer service. These are all parts of the program that make it a success. It's not just, we're fast.
A lot of pieces of this puzzle, but if they don't try to do everything at once, if they don't know how to do everything at once, it's a long-term contract.
Yes, 10 years.
So there's a little bit of time for the learning curve, boys and girls. If you're new, don't worry about it. And if you're not on the contract, go back and listen to segment 3 of this show where Joanne explained how maybe you might be able to leverage the vehicle even if you're not a contract winner. Joanne, thanks so much again for coming in. It's always fun.
Thank you.
This is not my day job. I do advise companies on all aspects of marketing to the government. I also advise a lot of companies on how to leverage LinkedIn to reach out to people who buy from contracts like SEWP and people who sell through contracts like SEWP. Drop me a line at mark@federaldirect.net. And thank you very much for listening to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
You've been listening to AmTower Off Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. AmTower Off Center, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
Get the latest TSP numbers and thrift savings plan news every day on federalnewsradio.com's TSP page. Go to federalnewsradio.com, search TSP.